General Menezes, Reel 7. We were talking about the train evacuation and the attack and your role in clearing boulders off the line. Now, that was the 1st of September. Now, what happened next?
The general officer commanding at Peshawar, Major General Ross Mackay, an Australian, flew in on the 1st and decided that the trains on the 2nd would not be one but two. So Lieutenant Colonel Shabir was commanding the first train, and the second train at an interval was commanded by Major Sawal Khan, who, as I already mentioned to you, was a West Punjabi officer, and in the normal circumstances should not have arrived in the battalion because we were allotted to India. But then at that particular point of time, when Major Dennis Newman left for the British Army, who had been our second command up to April,
you mentioned it, yeah,
1947, Sawal Khan, the GHQ's argument, GHQ India's argument, was that partition had not yet been decided in any way. But as I told you, there was already the undercurrent that the Muslim officers from West Punjab were, shall we say, already planning for it.
You mentioned this, yes.
Now on the 2nd September we set out, and the orders group had been attended by Colonel Shabir that night in the brigade headquarters. As a company commander was not present, but Major Sawal Khan, as second command, was present. It was to be in two trains. The first train command was Colonel Shabir, second train command was Major Sawal Khan, and the second train was only to move when the clearance was given by brigade headquarters for the second train to move up. Now, what happened was that there was supposed to be an armored corps escort. They were traveling along the road to escort the train as it traveled along the railway line towards the Indus. And separately, there was supposed to be Pakistani infantry, formerly infantry with the undivided Indian Army, who were supposed to be picketing the defile next to the Indus. In the event these Pakistani troops did not get into position in time, the train set off at the scheduled time as fixed with the then Pakistani railways, and of course the so-called armored corps escort was traveling on the road. When they came near the Indus River in what could be called the Kushalgarh defile, the engine was blown off the rails.
It's the first train.
The leading train. The engine was blown off the rails, and this was the same area where the motor transport convoy with the CEO's family had been fired at on 31st August, of which she had informed the commanding officer. But be all that as it may, it was assumed that with the armored corps escort along the road and the Pakistani troops formerly of the undivided Indian Army would be picketing the area of this defile, there would be no problems. In the event there were, because the Pakistani troops did not get into position on time, the engine was blown up and the firing started.
Now, were you on this train or the other train?
No, I was on the second train.
That's right, yes. I'm just making it clear for them.
I was on the second train because it had been argued that I was commanding the Muslim company, and Muslims' loyalty should not be tested. But I will come to that. There was a devious reason for that also. But anyway, the Muslim company's loyalty should not be tested too much. And so I was on the second train, but I was personally subordinate to Major Sawal Khan, who had a wireless set in communication with brigade headquarters. Unfortunately, brigade headquarters was rather paralyzed or paralytic because the brigade commander, Brigadier Godby, had already left under posting to Delhi. and his Pakistani incumbent had not taken up his appointment, and so it was an officiating brigade commander, a Lieutenant Colonel Grant, known locally as Lieutenant Colonel Blotto Grant.
He drank?
Well, he certainly drank because he was always bedridden with gout. I mean, that was, a tradition amongst the British, starting with the previous century in the Afghan Wars, where, as you know, Disraeli in the Parliament here had tried to explain in the Second Afghan War how 12,000 camels carried claret, because the people did not drink water, they chose to drink claret. Anyway, be all that as it may, he had gout and so was conducting, shall we say, his orders group from his bed. But nevertheless, so Major Sabar Khan, though we heard the firing on the first train, Major Sabar Khan, who was commanding, said he was not able to communicate with the first train, but he was able to communicate with the brigade quarters. Now that possibly was a valid excuse, because in the defiles, your sets were not skyway transmission, they were straight line transmission. So therefore your wireless waves, presumably from Colonel Shabir, could not reach Major Sabar Khan because they were in a defile. So after a couple of hours of this firing, Sabar Khan got orders that the train was being pulled back to Kohat. And then subsequently the other train was also pulled back because it could not go forward because the engine had been derailed. The total casualties that day were 26 killed. Total of the 2 days was 26 killed and 72 wounded. So Colonel Shabir and 4 other officers were admitted to the Kohat Military Hospital, along with some of the wounded, inclusive those wounded the previous day. The next morning, 3rd September, Major General Ross Mackay flew in and ordered Major Sabar Khan to leave immediately to report to his Pakistani unit, and that I was to take over officiating command. So I took over officiating command on the morning of 3rd September. I did not publish any casualty to that effect, because that would have affected, in my opinion, the pension of Lieutenant Colonel Shabir, because I knew that he would be in hospital for more than 21 days, and therefore his rank would be affected, his pension would be affected. So on that basis, I did not put in any casualty, but I assumed officiating command. Now, I had now only with me 2 officers, both Indians, one captain, one lieutenant, because all the other 4 officers of the battalion who were not on leave at that point of time were wounded and were in hospital with Colonel Shabir. So we did various duties protecting Indian Sikhs who were to fly out to India, because the threat was still assumed that the Pakistanis only wanted to attack Sikhs, though in the event, as we all know, that we were attacked on 1st September, but they had assumed that it was a Sikh train. So I was made responsible for guarding the airfield for the evacuation of these Sikhs. Then I was made to, shall we say, pick at the railway line right from Kohat to the Indus, while the other Indian troops, like of the cavalry, army service corps, and all, were driven out. But this time not by rail, they went in transport. They were driven out to Rawalpindi. So then when all these duties were concluded...
Was there any problem with either the airfield or the railway line attacked?
No.
While you were
No, I was doing it. You see, as far as I am concerned, having served under Colonel Boulter, I knew how to take preparatory action. So I was, shall we say, not going to be taken by surprise by these Pakistanis. Because there is no doubt in my mind that Major Sawal Khan, his wife, and another Muslim officer of the battalion knew that we were going to be attacked.
Now, what makes you say that?
Because that was subsequently the feeling that he, Sawal Khan, always made himself secure. On the 1st of September, he did nothing to remove the boulders in any way. He just sat in his compartment. He just sat in his compartment. On 2nd September, he could have been more positive, but was negative. But I had to defer to his authority, because he would, if anything happened to my CO, he was my prospective CO. And subsequently, the suspicion was there that though he didn't go to the local mosque in Thal, his wife and this Lieutenant Qureshi, which he functioned as an ADC, they used to go to the mosque every Friday. And they undoubtedly knew what the local Muslims were organizing and for the attack on the train. But that is a feeling of mine, and also subsequently a feeling of Colonel Shabir when he said he'd never been subjected to so much treachery and deception as we experienced in this journey.
And this was Major Sawal Khan.
Sawal Khan, S-A-N-W-A-L.
S-A-N-W-A-L.
He was a simple enough person, but I think under the influence of his wife, who was a very staunch.
So what happened next then? You were guarding the thing. You were using prophylactic fire then, as you call it?
No, I did not use prophylactic fire because I was on the alert. And once they saw that we were rather positive, because I picketed everywhere, you see. And the earlier you picket, the better. So I was not personally subjected to any firing. But I did send a subaltern of mine to cremate the 26 bodies that we had on our hands. But in the event, though I sent him out late in the night of the 2nd, he then came back in the early hours of 3rd September not having done anything. Because he argued that the Pakistanis, the local people, tribesmen, were surrounding him and about to open fire on them as soon as the cremation started, when his troops would be silhouetted by the flames. So we then had to organize ourselves a bit better rather than with this person who'd done nothing, to have the cremations done on the night of 3rd, 4th. So as I say, General Ross Mackay had come up. He briefed me the very first day to take over command.
What do you remember of the briefing?
Well, I thought he was a very fine person. I mean, he was an Australian and therefore blunt. And in my presence, he ordered Major Sawal Khan to leave immediately. As I say, the briefing was positive. So that then he flew in again and ordered me to that he'd received orders from GHQ Pakistan for the Muslim company to be taken by me up to the Indus River, when they would go on to Rawalpindi without me, and because I was the officiating CO and there was no other officer to command the battalion, I would then come back to command the rump of the battalion.
So the company was being sent to Pakistan?
Well, being sent to Rawalpindi, though it had opted for India. But the excuse given was that a train had to test the railway line before the line was reopened. And so therefore, I, with this company, would test the railway line up to the Indus. I would come back in an armored car, back to Kohat, and the company would then go on to to the to Rawalpindi. I personally feel that though he was not a party to it in any way, but in view of subsequent developments, which I shall tell you, that this company had been sent to Rawalpindi in order to be indoctrinated to change their option to Pakistan. So eventually, in the about the in the early part of October, that is the first week of October, we set out from Kohat by train. I having done all the duties given to me to protect the airfield, to protect the people, other people going out, and we arrived at Rawalpindi, and I had insisted that we would take on board all the wounded. We will not leave them in the Pakistan Army hospitals. So Colonel Shabir, whose leg was in plaster as a result of his wounds in the leg, and all the others, we took them on board along with Colonel Shabir's family. Now, Brigadier N.A.M. Raza, who had been in a way my nemesis when I was in GHQ earlier, now turns up at the railway station because he is now the director of organization in GHQ Pakistan, but the Pakistani officers used to refer to him as the director of disorganization. Anyway, he arrived at the station and ordered me to hand over the company to him, the Muslim, my Muslim company. I refused, as I said, that they had opted for India and I was taking them to India. So by putting a guard with weapons and bared bayonets into the driver's compartment, we prevailed on the driver to move the train, and we set off. But of course, obviously he had gone back to GHQ Pakistan and ordered that the train should be stopped en route. So at a place called Lala Musa, halfway to Lahore, during the night, normal scheduled halt, the engine with the crew disappeared. And there we were left at Lala Musa with all these wounded in the train. So therefore, I went to the railway station and we were told that there were floods ahead and therefore the train could not move. But obviously, in view of subsequent developments, Pakistan Army sent two squadrons of tanks to Lahore. In the last paragraph, of course, he says two regiments, actually two squadrons of tanks to Lahore in anticipation of our arrival there. Of course, this was not known to us directly, though at night one could see this armored train moving past. While we were there at this place, Lala Musa...
How do you spell Lala Musa? Sorry.
L-A-L-A-M-U-S-A. One word, L-A-L-A-M-U-S-A. But at the station ahead of us, there's a place called Kamoke, K-A-M-O-K-E. Now, while we were stuck at Lala Musa, we could find out from the way dogs were eating human corpses of the people who had been killed at Lala Musa, civilians who had been killed at Lala Musa. You see, the Indians have the habit of, if the train toilet is dirty, they will go into the fields during halts to defecate. And these poor women and men had been murdered in the sugarcane fields when they'd gone to defecate in the previous, shall we say, civilian trains that had passed through Lala Musa. Now, at Kamoke, which was a complete refugee train, a major attack had been taken place on the train, and the whole train massacred. This place, Kamoke. The Bahar Regiment platoon that was guarding it nearly all killed or wounded. But this we were all to learn gradually, because we were not in communication with anybody else by wireless. So when the station master was not being very helpful at Lala Musa and being non-communicative, I then rang up the commandant of the 1st Punjab Centre at Jhelum, which was the last station that we had passed before being stopped at Lala Musa, Colonel Bai, and he was very helpful, and he said he would send rations and food for us, because he said that's all he could do. He could not position an engine himself, because that had to be done by the railways, and only GHQ Pakistan could order the railways. But since there was some delay, I suspected something was going on. But anyway, I would go to the railway station daily, because that was the only way I could communicate. Then eventually Colonel Bai sent a vehicle for Colonel Shabia, and he and I then went to Jhelum and met him and begged him to do something to, because we could not have these wounded people. We only had our own regimental medical officer, but we didn't have the medicines, the facilities to maintain them over there, because some of the wounds had started festering. So he said he would do his best. And eventually an engine was positioned to take us on to Lahore. But as I say, I now realize that the prevarication by GHQ Pakistan was entirely to position the two squadrons of tanks, Province Horse Less One Squadron, at Lahore. So when we arrived at Lahore station, we found that we were surrounded by tanks. And they parleyed with Colonel Shabir, and insofar as I was concerned, I could not, shall we say, prevail upon him that we should insist that the company went with us, because inevitably, because they said they would fire on us if we tried to move with the company with us, because in any case we could not persuade the engine driver to take us very far if he was not cooperative. So despite my so-called remonstrations, because naturally Colonel Shabir said he had been wounded, others had been wounded, 26 had been killed, he did not want any further casualties, and he took the Pakistani officer's word for it, that the Muslim company would be sent to India after they had had an opportunity to consider reoption for Pakistan. So the company I reluctantly handed over to the Pakistanis, because I could not disobey my CEO. After all, if he had been wounded, if his family was on the train, if they were killed, it would have been on my conscience. But as I say, I was prepared to fight for it. So the company was handed over, and we went on. When we came to the new border...
Did you ever hear what happened to them, the company?
I'll tell you about it.
Okay.
When we... You see, the whole problem was that Pakistan had considered them allotted to Pakistan, because the Muslim of the British...
Oh, no, I understand that. I just wonder what happened when they got, you know...
No. So the British officers in the Armed Forces Reconstitution Committee had assumed that all Pakistani units or sub-units should be allotted to Pakistan, and Pakistan had planned their new battalions with these Indian Muslim companies. So they were arguing that they were acting within their rights. Nevertheless, we reached the border. But since you raised the point, when Colonel Shabir had represented to Field Marshal Auchinleck, who was the colonel of the regiment, as to why were a Muslim company that had opted for India and were Indian Muslims being allotted to Pakistan, he replied rather cryptically, because by that time he was fed up, by invoking some biblical quotation, which really means that whatever will be, will be. I'm not quite que sera, sera, but it was something on those lines. So we got to the border, and then in the middle of the night, and then to our horror, the engine and the driver disappeared. And it's all deliberate, you see.
Which side? So the Pakistan side of the border?
I mean, they stopped on the, just on the Pakistan side of the border, and the driver and with the engine uncoupled and disappeared. So the only recourse for me was in the middle of the night to walk about 10 miles to the next Indian railway station and beg for an engine, which I did. And I brought this engine, and we then moved into Amritsar. Now, things being what they are, the Indian population at Amritsar railway station had heard about the way we had been treated, and already this previous train of refugees had been massacred almost to a man or woman at Kamoke, because when we passed through Kamoke, we could see all the corpses littering the railway line. And so I was still effectively functioning as a CO because Colonel Sevier had difficulty moving, and I ensured that our troops did not fire on Muslims, anything of that nature. We got to Jalandhar, and there was a problem of rolling stock, so we had to halt a couple of days at Jalandhar, and we were put into a temporary camp where temporary military accommodation where Muslim refugees had been quartered. And the whole thing was very pathetic in the sense that these poor refugees, the elderly people, had died while they were so-called moving to Pakistan, and they had buried them in the floors of the barrack, because Indian troops accommodation was not permanent in British days. So after I accompanied Colonel Shabir, and we met the Indian GOC at Jalandhar, we then got our train and moved off to reach Bombay, a place called Dadar, a junction called Dadar. And the journey had taken us 48 days from Thal, starting 1st September. It had taken us 48 days to reach our destination, Bombay.
So you got there 18th of October. Now, so what happened next?
The sub-area commander and the assistant quartermaster general of Bombay sub-area were at the railway station, and had said that Army Headquarters, New Delhi, had wanted to declare me a deserter because I had not reported to the new Army Headquarters when the posting order had been issued for me to report to the new Army Headquarters by 14th of August. The background basically being that there was a shortage of staff trained officers, since I'd already been a staff officer before independence. A posting order had been issued for me to be promoted to acting lieutenant colonel, and I should report to the new Army Headquarters, New Delhi, by 14th of August. In the event, and Colonel Shabir says he never knew anything about it, I did not know anything about it, nor had J.H. Group of Standard at any stage informed us.